Well, last week we were burgled. They got into the house through a very small hole. The house was turned over, but ice cream was taken from the freezer. What does it mean? Maybe a child was involved. And what about those strange hairs on the carpet? Do you like mysteries? Do you like unraveling riddles? Would you make a good detective? We have a detective here. Well, as we come to the empty tomb, the clues are there. John tells us on the Friday, Jesus was dead. Nobody doubts it. The Roman soldiers did a thorough job. And Jesus was buried the same day. But it had all been a bit of a rush. So after the Sabbath, after the Saturday, early on the Sunday morning, Mary Magdalene hurried to the tomb to finish the job of embalming and anointing the body. Now, Mary's not alone. We're told by the other gospel writers that she's accompanied by other women. And when they arrive at the tomb, not only do they find the stone has been rolled away, but Jesus' body is gone. And in Mary's mind, there can be only one explanation. So she hurries to Peter and John, and she says to them, they have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him. So Peter and John run to the tomb. Mary's telling the truth. The body is gone. But the tomb is not empty. The burial shroud in which Jesus' body had been wrapped is still there. Only it's not been unwrapped. It's just that the body inside it has gone. It's like an empty cocoon that's collapsed under the weight of spices woven into its folds. There's no sign of disorder, no evidence that the burial cloth has been unwound. This doesn't look like a grave robbery. What does it mean? Well, John is the first to get it. Verse 8, we're told he saw and believed. So have you done the detective work? All the clues are there. No sign of any disturbance or violence or robbery. So no one's stolen the body, and yet the body's gone. Well, there can be only one explanation. The explanation which no one in the world, least of all the disciples, was expecting. And that is Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. But so far, no sign of Jesus, which is all about to change. So let's look together at the reading which we had, and John chapter 20 and verses 11 to 18. Mary came to the tomb with the other women. She ran off to find Peter and John, leaving the other women behind. By the time she returns, the other women have gone, leaving a Mary alone at the tomb. So what we'll do is simply unfold the narrative, and then we'll draw one lesson. So we're told, verse 11, Mary stood outside by the tomb, weeping. As far as she's concerned, the grave has been plundered. It's deeply upsetting. There's that sense, even in death, they won't leave Jesus alone. And Mary's heart is breaking. But Mary stood outside the tomb, weeping, and as she wept, she's close to despair, and all she can do is cry her heart out. But now, verse 11, she stoops down and she looks into the tomb. It's like a low cave hewn out of the rock. But Mary's eyes don't fix on the cold stone ledge on which the body had been laid. She's not even looking at the empty grave clothes. What she sees is two angels. Verse 12, and she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. Angels top and tailing where the body had been. In other words, Mary, the explanation for the tomb is far from natural. These happenings are supernatural. Verse 13, then they said to her, woman, and it's a term of respect, woman, why are you weeping? It's a gentle question, isn't it? As if to say, there's no need to cry. But look at Mary's response. She said to them, because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him. Now, isn't that extraordinary? She's looking straight at angels. She's speaking to angels. But the fact that they are angels barely registers. It's telling us about Mary's state of mind, isn't it? She's preoccupied. She's overwhelmed. There's one great reality. The only thing that she knows is they've taken away the body of my Lord. Now something causes her to turn round. She's aware of another, verse 14. Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Why didn't she know it was Jesus? Well, for one, she's not expecting to see him. She's looking for a dead body, not a living Christ. And you know what I mean. You go on holiday, and there on the beach, you think you see a colleague from work. You look at, maybe it's them, maybe it's not them. You're not expecting to see them. And anyway, they're dressed in, they've got swimming trunks. Normally you see them in a suit. And you look, and you look again, you think, is it them, is it not them? But you're not sure. Maybe that's part of the explanation. She's just not expecting to see him. But there's more. Jesus looks different. He's clothed with a resurrection body. It's the stuff of 1 Corinthians 15. A resurrection body that's incorruptible, glorious, powerful. So yes, it is him. But he looks different. Remember, this is the body that can pass through grave clothes. So there's been a change. Hence, Mary, through her tears, doesn't recognize him. Verse 15. Jesus said to her, woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking? Again, it's a gentle question. And if this man is a stranger, it's a surprisingly kind question. Who are you looking for? Anyway, how does he know she is looking for someone? Unless he's more than a stranger. And if she's looking for a body, why does he speak of someone who's alive? Who is this stranger? Jesus said to her, woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking? She, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away. Again, we're looking inside Mary's mind, aren't we? Three times, one sentence, she talks of him, him, him. Her thoughts are dominated by him, by Jesus. And what she says is deeply moving. Tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away. Well, Mary, how are you going to fetch and carry the body of a grown man? It's impossible. But for Mary, her devotion knows no limits. As far as she's concerned, love will find a way. And now as we come to verse 16, Mary's turned away from the stranger. He speaks one word. It's just one word. And it changes everything. Because this is no longer the voice of a stranger. Verse 16, Jesus said to her, Mary. At least that's what it says in English. Her native tongue is Aramaic. Jesus said to her, Mariam. And no one ever spoke her name as he spoke it. And the recognition is instant. She turned and said to him, Rabboni, which is to say, teacher. Oh, the gentleness of Christ with his grieving child. And now all that pent up love and emotion, it just comes flooding out. And she holds on to Jesus. There's that sense, I've lost you once. I never want to lose you again. And Jesus has to say to her, verse 17, he says, don't cling to me. Don't hold on to me. Mary, let me go. Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. It's all right, Mary, I'm not going anywhere soon. I'm not about to disappear. And anyway, I have a job for you. You need to spread the word. So go to my brothers. Say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. Everything has changed. An empty tomb, a resurrection, and now Jesus speaks of a new relationship. My disciples are now my brothers. And my Father is now their Father. Jesus is uniquely the Son of God. He's the Son by right. And now he speaks of a whole family of children by adoption. I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God. Everything's changing. Who would have thought it? A woman whose testimony in those days wouldn't have even been accepted in a court of law. Mary, the first to see Jesus and the first to go with the good news that he is risen. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her. Will we close with that lesson? Mary. What's the story? On Friday, the BBC showed a documentary, The Mystery of Mary Magdalene. And it was all hot stuff. Bride of Christ or enemy of the church? Prostitute, apostle, madwoman, saint? And Melvin Bragg was attempting to set the record straight. No, I quite like Melvin Bragg. But he's rather missing the point. We used to have a cat, Mr. Chuffy. And his eyesight was poor. So when I threw scraps of food outside the back door, he couldn't see them. And so I'd find myself pointing to the food and saying, there! There! You stupid cat, it's there! But instead of looking at where I was pointing, he would simply look at my hand. And Melvin's missing the point, isn't he? Instead of looking at Mary and wondering whether she's a sort of proto-feminist or she's the victim of some misogynist propaganda, the real question he must ask himself, we must ask ourselves, is where is Mary pointing? What's the big story? Jesus said to her, Mary. She turned and said to him, Rabboni. The big story, the story which Mary hurried to tell, is that Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. Melvin's missing the point. My friend, are you? A dead Christ changes nothing. A risen Christ changes everything. Now, three times a year, we distribute a magazine to the neighborhood called Spotlight. A couple of weeks ago, one of our spotlights returned to us. It was pushed under the door at the front of the chapel. And written on it in great big black letters, black felt tip pen, so we get the message, were the words, things like this give religion a bad name. It wasn't signed. But whoever it was, they divide the world into the religious and the non-religious. And their minds of religions are much of a muchness, and they put Amy and Park Chapel in the religious category, and we're the ones giving religion a bad name. But a risen Christ cuts across all of that. All religions are about following a way of life. Real Christianity is about following a person, Jesus Christ. And what makes Jesus worth following? Verse 16, Jesus said to her, Mary. Jesus lives. He's the only man who's ever been killed and then come back from the dead. In one sense, I hope we do give religion a bad name. Because religion is not the answer. Christ is. A risen Christ changes everything. Most people in the UK are Platonists. We believe that this world is solid, physical, and that the world on the other side is sort of shadowy and non-physical. And in that sense, as we look at it, this is the real world, and that's the shadowy spirit world. But suppose Plato was wrong. Suppose reality is bigger than that. That morning, what Mary clung to was very real. Very solid. A real Jesus with a real body. In other words, life on the other side is real, physical, solid. More real than life here. Mary thought she was talking to the gardener. And she was. Adam, the first man, was the first gardener. He walked out on God. He ruined everything. Paradise lost. And here is Jesus, the last Adam. He's the new gardener. He's come to bring us back to God. Paradise regained. And what begins with his resurrection will eventually end with the resurrection of the universe. He will make all things new, a new creation, a restored creation, a real world that will outlast this world, where even death itself has been conquered. Which makes sense of Jesus' words. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. Not in the shadow lands, but in the land of the real. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. A world from which death has been banished. A risen Christ changes everything. David Miliband, brother of Ed, back in the news this week, stepped down as an MP. Someone joked to spend less time with his family, to move to the States to work for a charity. A little while back, he was asked the question, who would he like most to sit next to on a long-haul flight? Good question, isn't it? Who would you most like to sit next to on a long-haul flight? Well, his answer was he'd like to sit next to Charles Darwin. Because in his words, he had it all sorted out. But did he? Charles Darwin died in 1882. And no one's heard from him since. Can a dead man sort out my life? And what if my life is rubbish? Can he give me a new one? Can he deal with my fears and sorrows? And what of my guilt and shame? And what happens when I come to die? I'd want to be in the hands of someone who's conquered death. Wouldn't you? A risen Christ changes everything. And finally, where are we? We're in a graveyard. Why? Because Jesus died and was buried. Why did he die? He's done nothing worthy of death. In fact, he's innocent. And the answer which the Bible gives is that he died for the guilty. Upon that cross, the sins of countless people who've offended God, they were put to Jesus' account. So that when God came to punish the guilty, Jesus took the blame. If the wages of sin is death, then, says the Bible, Jesus died that death. So that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. But how do we know he paid the price that God's justice demands? Because he's risen from the dead. That was God's declaration. He's paid the price. A dead Jesus changes nothing. A risen Christ changes everything. That resurrection was God's clear declaration that Jesus has done it all. So whoever comes to him, they can enjoy peace with God, the calm of sins forgiven, and a new life walking with him. Go and tell my brothers, I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. And that's the big story. My friend, have you seen it? Why don't Buddhist monks sing? They chant, but they don't sing. Why? Because life is painful. The best we can hope for is nirvana. The void, the emptiness, the nothingness, where I feel no pain. They don't sing because they have nothing to sing about. But if Jesus is risen, if coming to him I'm forgiven, right with God, if coming to Christ I know the loveliest of all beings, and that I have new life, and that death isn't the end, and that to die in Christ is not to die, that saved from hell, I go to heaven, not a world of shadows, but the real. To be with Christ, in whose presence is fullness of joy, and at whose right hand are pleasures forevermore. Then I can sing, even in the darkest hour. Heaven is filled with music. Is filled with the praises of him who once was dead but is alive forevermore. A risen Christ changes everything. My friend, have you seen it? Have you put your trust in Jesus? Have you fallen upon his kind arms? Oh Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. Have you bowed the knee? Has he put a new song in your mouth?